This is Music Respawn. I'm Kate Remington with Gareth Coker, and it's always so much fun to have a chance to chat with you.
Thanks, Kate. It's great to be back. I think this is the fourth time? I've lost count at this point, but thanks for having me back.
I think it's the fourth, but it's always so much fun, and there's always such interesting music to talk about. And this time, it's your two soundtracks for a couple of expansions for Minecraft Mythology, Egyptian and Norse. And, you know, there's this thing that the video games can do, if they're really well done, called tangential learning, where they give you sort of the seeds to spark your interest, and then you kind of go off and do your own research. And I really found myself digging in, because there are a lot of gaps in my knowledge of Egyptian and Norse mythology. And so when you were asked to do these projects, I mean, what was your research path like?
Well, I think whenever you start with something like this, I mean, first of all, you panic, because it's like, I'm British, so okay, I'm a little bit closer to the Norse mythology side of things, but I'm definitely not close to the Egyptian mythology side of things. So you're like, well, okay, well, I've got to really dive in and find out what this is all about. So, you know, we're very lucky in the 21st century to have Google at our fingertips, and YouTube, and library, and you can still go to the library and get a ton of CDs pretty easily. But the thing I kind of look for first is what is the folk music of that era, and then finding out what scales and what harmonies they're using. It all starts with the scales and harmonies. It was my same approach for the Chinese mythology pack and the Greek mythology pack. Once you've gotten the scales and harmonies figured out, you've already limited your choices. After that, it's obviously about the instrumentation. But, you know, the instrumentation in most cases is pretty well documented. We've got a pretty long history of recorded music, or if it wasn't recorded, we have a rough idea of what it sounds like. So, for example, going to find out like what old Norse instruments were is not too tricky. Likewise with Egypt, though it obviously goes a bit further back, there's still a lot of academics keeping this music alive. And one of the things I like to do is either just going on YouTube or just looking at universities who offer world music courses. You can end up emailing a professor from the university, and they're usually only too happy to help you out and like at least point you in the right direction. And it only takes them 3 or 4 minutes. So that's like the starting point. And then, you know, the other thing that you need to do, if I just made Egyptian folk music or Norse folk music, I don't think anyone would really enjoy listening to it in game. It's not a slight on the music of either of those cultures. It's just, it's got to feel right in the game. It's got to feel like Minecraft and what I've done for the other mythologies. So there is an element of making it, of applying it to media. I mean, that's what we do. We write music and apply it to media. That is our job. If I was just doing folk music, then yeah, of course I could just put that out there. So then I'm taking the core of what this music is and then trying to make it accessible for the Minecraft audience.
That was one of the things that I wanted to ask you about, because these two make the four mythologies that you've written that we've talked about, and there's something about them that is like instantly identifiable as a Minecraft mythology soundtrack. So how do you do that?
I think it just kind of happens organically. I mean, the look of the game is the same no matter what. Obviously the art design changes from mythology to mythology, but ultimately it's still got that kind of epic feel, but also it's got that unique Minecraft charm, which is the same charm that, you know, all of those impressive Lego structures have, and it's the same in Minecraft. Like, I used to be one of those people who didn't really get Minecraft. Why would people like this? The graphics don't work. But then when you fire it up on a big screen, it's very easy to get sucked in. Like, once I started playing it, when I first started working on Minecraft, I was like, oh, okay, I understand now. And my job is to, I think, make the worlds that these mythologies represent an inviting place to be, unless of course it's like a dark area of the game. But overall, like, it's kind of like, what, it's more like a welcome to Egyptian mythology, please go and explore. It's almost kind of like you're entering a museum in many ways, because the maps for these mythologies are so extensive. They really are absolutely enormous, and there's so many things to do and see in all of them. And like with the music, the tangential learning also happens through the landmarks that you're visually seeing in the game as well. So I'm just trying to make it an inviting place to be. And I think one of the things that helps with that, we've had an orchestra on every single recording, which is nice. The Egyptian mythology one was particularly large, which was very fun. And I think just, first of all, adding that human element to it always brings things to life a little bit more. But also, my production style across the four mythologies, I've deliberately tried to keep it similar, whether that's through judicious use of reverbs or the kinds of instruments that I'm using. But also, they're all quite melodic. I think people like something to have to latch onto. I think it was just texture, it might get turned off pretty quickly. I think having a melody or a tune allows the listener to kind of get drawn into the music a little bit more, and that might be one of the common threads that stands out between all four mythologies. Just having that melodic line and the melodic shape that comes in and out, weaves its way in and out through each piece, makes each track hopefully enjoyable to listen to, rather than just being background music. It sort of sits in that place where it's kind of background but also draws your attention, but it doesn't draw your attention for too long, and that's kind of the goal.
And with both of them, they start with this incredibly epic and inviting is a great word, with Asgard, the home of the Norse gods, and then for the Egyptian one, the Great Pyramids. And you just get a sense that you're going to go on this epic, epic journey, which is just so cool, and especially with the Great Pyramids. And you had mentioned a while back, I think, that one of your influences with the Egyptian one was these wonderful kind of mid-20th century films.
Yes.
That were set in Egypt. Yeah.
Yeah, it was funny. When we first started talking with 4J Studios, who develop all the mythologies, I was like, well, what do you want me to do for this? Because I did point out that Assassin's Creed Origins we're only about 6 months removed from Assassin's Creed Origins, and that score was fantastic. And I was like, I don't want to do that because that's already been done, and Sarah did an unbelievable job on it as well. So I was like, what are you guys thinking of this? And then they literally, you know, sent over a big zip file of music, and they're like, we really like these slightly, I don't want to say old-fashioned, but they are old school for sure, because you don't hear much of this kind of music anymore. I mean, they even sent stuff from The Mummy, which is just like it's just like kind of fun stuff. But you know, stuff like Jewel of the Nile, just and even going further back, James Newton Howard's Atlantis score was a reference as well. It's just they liked that larger than life sound, because if you think about it, what the Egyptians were doing 2,000 years ago, it's pretty remarkable. Some of the structures they were able to come up with. And I think they really wanted to get that sense of scale with the Egyptian pack.
We'll be right back.
Now, with the mythology pack, it's not that the structures aren't impressive, but they're impressive in a different way. And with the mythology, they wanted... Norse mythology overall is quite dark, and it's mm-hmm. pretty obvious in the music that it's the darkest of the four mythologies that I've done. And I think the only reference they sent over for that was the amazing group, I'm going to probably butcher their pronunciation, Wardruna, but they've been featured on Vikings. They've done a ton of stuff.
Yeah, they're like an Icelandic band.
So, but yeah, that was like the only thing they really wanted. And I was like, well, we can't do 12 tracks just like that. But that's a good baseline to have. The track Valhalla on the soundtrack is probably the closest in feel to what they're kind of doing. It's very heavy. The one thing which Wardruna does do, their music is very based around drones, and it's quite static. There are some builds, but they're very subtle. Most of the tracks in Minecraft are only 3.5 to 4 minutes, so we have less time to do those really long, crazy builds that Wardruna do. So my tracks, as a result, have a bit more of an ebb and flow, but Wardruna tracks are fantastic because they really are like a journey, like a 6 to 7 minute journey. So yeah, between the two, like you're looking for the references that you're given, and then it's like, well, how can I try and make this own? And combined with the research and the live players and your own musical instincts, that's basically how these four mythologies have come together.
Well, each one of them is just incredible. And you know, you mentioned Wardruna as the sound that kind of helped influence the Norse mythology. And the other thing is, you've managed to find, I mean, maybe it's easier than I think, but to find Hardanger fiddle players and people who play ethnic instruments. But the way you've incorporated them into all of these soundtracks, but these two in particular, is just really remarkable, because they don't stand out. They're just part of the whole sound of each cue.
Well, I think one of the dangers is, and it was kind of fashionable to do this in Hollywood for a while, like, if we're going to Egypt, we are going to hear a duduk, and it's going to be really mm-hmm. super prominent. And look, I've done that because look, it's a Middle Eastern instrument, and it's a very prominent part of that area's culture. But I think what they used to do, it was like they put like a string bed or a pad, and then the duduk melody. Like there was nothing going on in the rest of the music. And I've been doing this forever, basically. I mean, since Ori, and even before Ori, I like to blend things together and have things come in and out all the time and give people different things to listen to. I do highlight instruments from time to time, but they're never going to be there for the whole piece. I've never done a concerto ever, and I probably never will. It's just not my style. I like to, it's fun passing things around, and I don't think the kind of music I write anyway allows itself to have things sitting on one instrument for too long. But the other benefit of having players play the local instruments is that, you know, it can make you, it makes you look really good. It's like, I could never play the Hardanger fiddle as well as someone who spent their life doing that. And they can add, she can add all the inflections that I would, it would take me months to learn all of them, and then even longer to figure out how to play them. Why not just, all I had to do was give the core notes on the page, and then all of the stuff that happens in between that makes it sound Norse, that's the musician's interpretation. So it's kind of this happy, like, middle ground where I'm giving her the core of what to do, and then she just adds all the little inflections and grace notes that, yes, I could notate, and sometimes I'm like, can you do an extra inflection here in bar three? But overall, you're getting a real person's interpretation who is from that part of the world, and that's always going to be superior to what the Brit can do, which is what I am. It's the same when you hire anyone who has dedicated themselves to learning an instrument from that region for a long time. It's a bonus if they are from that part of the world, but there's tons of specialists here in LA as well. I was lucky on Chinese Mythology to have Karen Han, who has played on Kung Fu Panda and just about every Hollywood film that needs an erhu. She was just like, give me the notes and I'll figure it out. And it's been the same with the Hardanger fiddle, the same with the nickel harp that I had in Norse mythology, and then the same with any of the wind instruments that I use as well.
It's such an amazing sound. And honestly, probably way back in ancient times in Scandinavia, these pieces would have been improvised. So it's kind of neat that your Hardanger fiddle player was able to just sort of noodle around in between the melodies that you'd written for her. And there's one cue in particular, Folkvanger. It's this meadow where the warriors who don't make it to Valhalla go, and Freya guards it. And it's just, it's so plaintive and so beautiful, and just such a great example of what the Hardanger fiddle can sound like.
Oh, that was, I think that was actually the last track I did for Norse mythology, Folkvanger. I was just like, I need something which is a bit more ambient than all of the other tracks on the album. And Rachel Nesvig's Hardanger fiddle on that is really, really, really good. It just kind of soars over everything else, and it allows the big build to happen underneath it really smoothly as well. That's definitely one of my favorite tracks on that album, but probably the favorite is Valhalla, just because it was a monster track to write as well, especially once it gets going in the final third.
Thank you.
Yeah, you know, it's like I want to hang out with those guys because they sound like they're having so much fun. I mean, here they are. They've done what they needed to do as warriors, right. And now they can just party. Right. And I was going to ask you what some of those other instruments were. There's the nickel harpa, and then there's that incredible horn. What in the world was that?
So the horns are heavily digitally manipulated. They're just ancient war horns. I mean, I've got like goat's horns lying around here, just randomly sitting around. And you can get some amazing results if you just blow these things, record the sound, and then you just digitally manipulate them by pitching them down a lot. But then I combine that with brass, but I pitch those down as well. So everything's kind of a pitched down version. It makes it sound really heavy and kind of swampy. So it's kind of, it's things that were recorded live and then were digitally manipulated. Because other than what the Minnesota Vikings use for their giant horn before their NFL football games, I don't think there's a horn big enough to make that kind of really deep, low sound. It definitely requires digital manipulation. I'm sure I could hire someone to like make a horn that big, but it would cost a fortune. And then of course you'd still need to have someone be able to create enough air for the to make the sound that you need to make. I mean, the other classic trick is to get a ship's foghorn. Mm. The foghorn is a fantastic sound if you can get a good recording of it. It's quite hard to get near a foghorn because you'd have to be on the ship in fog, and you need to be on a cargo ship, and the chances of a composer getting onto a cargo ship are pretty slim. So
you almost sound like you've done it.
I haven't, but now don't give me ideas. That's kind of a classic thing to do is get a foghorn or similar sound and then digitally manipulate it to make it sound lower than it is. And you just get this really hefty sound. And then it's just about stacking more and more instruments on top of it. And then you get this kind of like big, big weighty instrument. So the horns that you're hearing are like a combination of things, basically.
Thank you. Well, it's just like this incredible call to action. And so what were some of the specific, I don't know, visual cues or when you get builds from the studio to show you what these different areas were going to look like? What were some of the things that you were able to kind of use to get the right tone for your music?
Minecraft's very good, like with how they plan these things out. And one of the first things they send me is a map of the level, and I get to see like everything they're planning on creating in the level. So they've got all of these, you know, Jotunheim is it's not really listed as a place on the map in Minecraft because that's not really how Minecraft works. But the area in the game, there is an area in the game that is inspired by Jotunheim. There is an area in the game inspired by Valhalla. There's an area in the game inspired by all of the different titles and tracks. So that, like, a title in the track, there is a place inspired by it in the game. And then they give me the visuals to support that. And I'm like, well, that's kind of helping me out a lot. And often they also take video where they just give me fly-throughs of the area. So any of the, you know, on Egyptian mythology, it's like they'll just take a camera and show me like how the pyramids are laid out in the level, and I can get a good idea of what the scale is. So yeah, it's like a mix of getting good reference material and good in-game material as well. Because the game is, you know, the game already exists, it's very easy for them to send me stuff that I can poke around with and fly around the levels and take a look at what they're up to. Because really they're just doing a lot of building. So because these maps they are creating are no small feat. Like, I'm sure you've seen some of the crazy stuff that's been created by the Minecraft community over the years. Like, I think one of my favorites is someone built the whole of Minas Tirith, I think, it's just bananas. Like, where do people find the time? But for the mythology packs, you know, they have people whose sole job it is to create these levels. So if I do have any questions, I usually get pretty quick answers as well. So I'm very, very well supported on the on getting information on how the levels look and feel.
Yeah, and you mentioned that the soundtrack for The Mummy was one of the things that they had suggested to you for Egyptian mythology, and now I can totally hear that in some of those Nether levels, because they're really creepy.
Yes. Yeah, I mean, The Mummy is quite an over the top soundtrack in parts, but it's over the top. It's kind of when it does the horror thing, it's slightly campy horror. I don't think anyone would disagree with me saying that the mummy films are campy. I think that's an okay thing to say. Mm-hmm. but you know, with the horror elements, yeah, it's you don't want to go all the way, because again, it's Minecraft, and you know, there's a young community with Minecraft. You don't want to go full horror, but they still need an element of that. And ultimately, it comes down to supporting what the visuals are. And if the visuals are telling me to go a little bit darker, then that's what I'm going to do. What did surprise me was how dark they wanted to go for Norse mythology, because I kept on sending them tracks and they were like, yeah, you can go heavier. And I'm like, okay. And then I send them another one. Yeah, you can go heavier still. And then I was like, okay, all right, I'm really going to go all out this time. And that's how Valhalla was born, basically. I was just like, okay, you guys wanted heavy. I was sure they weren't going to accept it. And then I sent it to them and then they were like, oh, this is great. This is exactly the right kind of heaviness we were looking for. And I'm like, wow, that was, if you'd have told me 4 years ago I'd be writing that kind of music for Minecraft, I wouldn't have believed you. They really let me push the boat out on both projects. Just with what I'm doing is not the kind of music that my, you know, people who started playing Minecraft, it's definitely not what they grew up with. It's really the purpose of this music, as I said at the beginning, is to draw people into a new world. And if that means amping up the music a little bit more, then that's what needs to be done. And 4J Studios have been super on board and in sync with me on that. So it's kind of, I'm very lucky they've given me first of all, this enormous platform, but also, you know, they've let me do 4 of these now.
Which is great. So clearly you're doing something right and something that they really, really love.
Yes.
And, and Osiris is another, like, really dark track. I mean, he's the god of the underworld, and clearly things aren't right in that world, and you've brought in the chorus and everything, so that must have been a fun cue to write as well.
Yeah, all of them kind of have their own stories, and one of the things it comes back to the research. Like once you start looking up into all of the different stories, I mean, some of them are really crazy when you start reading up on them. Once I have a story to latch onto, I'm like, well, I can write a piece of music about this. Because at the beginning, it's like, oh, I've got to write, you know, 45 minutes, 60 minutes, or whatever it is, of Egyptian music. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's that can seem quite daunting. But then once you start to break it up and you look for the little stories, I like to think of all of these tracks as, you know, 10 to 12 little stories based on what I've read about in Egyptian mythology.
That's very cool. And Abu Simbel is another one. Now, I know you used Kristen Nagus yes. as that
this
incredible.
Is her, this is her big track, player. For sure.
Yeah.
well, English horn, it's kind of not Egypt. It's certainly not Hollywood Egyptian music without English horn. It just isn't. Yeah. English horn and Egyptian music kind of just goes hand in hand. And, you know, I mean, this is another one where I almost feel like I'm cheating because there's so much solo English horn, especially in the first, you know, two thirds of this. I mean, I don't really have to do much after writing them. It's really just the melody and some chords. And I like that almost to me feels like I'm not doing enough as a composer. But that's often where some of the best ideas happen, is when composers don't overcomplicate things, because it really is just Kristen, and then the strings are just supporting her, and then it just gets a little bit bigger for the end. But yeah, the English horn, yeah, we talked about that quite a lot, and I was like, okay, I will write to you something that really shows off what you can do. And she has unbelievable tone. I know she likes playing the oboe, but I think she likes playing the English horn more. But I don't think she would complain either if I gave her more oboe stuff.
Well, you say you don't write concertos, but this is almost that's, like a
that's true. Actually, this is probably like the most soloistic of any of them. The music it's based on, you know, it's based on what the, you know, the temple actually is. So I just felt like that was the, you know, these temples are really, you know, if you read into the history of them, it's like, you know, it's they're pretty significant temples, and I like, and they're quite magnificent structures. Even if they do look like two rocks in the ground, they are technically Ramesses temples. And it's like, then you read up about Ramesses, and it's just like, oh my goodness, there's just so much history wrapped up even just by looking at the images of these temples. And I just felt like I wanted to start small with that track and then just get big at the end, almost like as they were being built, basically.
So cool. I hadn't thought about it like that, but yeah, absolutely. And the wonderful thing about listening to these soundtracks is even away from the game, they can take you to these places, which is just really incredible, because yep. they're so atmospheric and so specific to a place and a time. So
well, hopefully we get to do more. I mean, it's that's obviously up to 4J Studios, but we're definitely not out of places that we could do mythologies for yet. So it's just the most awesome playground to play in, because I do have such a lot of freedom, and I kind of get to, as I said, I get to find my own stories, and then try to put them in the music.
Oh, that's so cool. Well, besides Kristen, are there any other musicians that you had a chance to work with again that you've worked with before?
On the Egyptian one, no. The Norse mythology, Rachel Nesvig was... She was new, and Neil Acri actually recommended her to me. She was fantastic. She just knew what to do. And then for the Nickel Harp, I put out basically a casting call on Facebook. I was like, I need Nickel Harp. Please message me. And then I found Morgan O'Shaughnessy, who I know has played on Austin Wintory's stuff. I know he's done a ton of soundtrack work for Blizzard as well. It's funny how the same names keep cropping up across different projects. But he was absolutely brilliant as well. He said I write well for Nickel Harp. I'm like, I have no idea how I write well for Nickel Harp, but thanks. I think maybe it's just because it was the fact that he got to play melodies. He's a monster, and he's super quick. I mean, he did all of his parts in like 24 hours and then just sent them back to me. And it's kind of nice to have this little black book of musicians that gradually builds up over time that you can collaborate with again and again when the right project calls for it.
Yeah, definitely. And you're probably learning more about the specifics of what sounds best on each instrument too. So you're kind of building up your own catalog.
Well, that's one of the things I'm very big on. Like when I was at music school, I was told like the best way to learn is like, don't bury your head in a textbook. Just go to the practice rooms and sit down with a violinist or, you know, cello player, oboe player, it doesn't matter what instrument. And, you know, just ask them about their instrument and, you know, put some music in front of them and ask them, you know, is this playable? How could I write this better? What would make this sound better? I've done that with the orchestra, although, you know, there's always new things to learn. So I kind of know what I'm doing there. But with, you know, with all of the instruments that are spread out over the globe, you know, you're always going to be learning something new. you know, if they, let's say they did, you know, in Indian mythology, for example, it would just like that's a whole another set of scales, that's a whole different set of harmonies, and it's definitely a whole set of instruments. And you know, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to play tabla. Even though it's just a drum, it's really not just a drum. Like, there's no way I'm ever going to be able to play it as well as someone who's been brought up in that environment. So it's like, that's, you know, no matter where we go next, it's like there is always something new to learn. And that also makes it really enjoyable for me, because I don't, it's, you know, we do a lot of these, and they happen fairly quickly. So it's like, you know, and when you're writing that much music in a short period of time, you need to having the help of an expert bring your music to life can take a little bit of the pressure off.
Yeah, I bet. And speaking of that, I know you had a very short amount of time to write these. Did you write them simultaneously, or were they separate?
It's very so Norse mythology, I think it came out at the end of last year, but it was like we started in like late October and it was wrapped by end of November, and that's composed, orchestrated, recorded, mixed, delivered. So it does happen super fast. But again, because Minecraft is so good at the planning, and you know, they give me time to do my research, getting all that's basically week one. I don't really do write very much in week one. It's all pre-production. Once that's done, I kind of have a plan for how I'm going to attack all the music, and once the first two or three tracks are done, I kind of have it figured out in my head. Obviously, you still need to write new melodies and new harmonies, etc., etc., but the sound reveals itself over those first two or three tracks, and those are always the hardest. Once I've done the first two or three, the rest kind of just comes naturally, basically. And it was the same kind of time frame for Egyptian mythology. We started in March-ish and then recorded in April, and then I think it came out in May. So yeah, I mean, it's nice, because it also means I know I can deliver when you know, it's 3 to 4 weeks is not impossible, but you know, you have to, it focuses the mind. but it's nice to know that I can, you know, deliver, because you know, I've written a lot of music in the last 3.5-4 years. But, you know, I remind myself that, like, I think, you know, I feel like I'm still relatively, it's still part one, basically, for me. Like, you know, 6 years ago, I'd barely shipped a game. So, like, that's the kind of thing. So I still feel like I'm learning, you know, how to be quicker and how to be more efficient. And, of course, how to write better music or become a better musician.
Yeah, I just came across a really amazing quote from Leonard Bernstein, who said, "To achieve great things, two things are needed: a plan and not quite enough time."
Yes.
So,
but that definitely applied in both these cases, actually.
I was going to ask if it had. Do you ever worry about maybe not running dry, but like you're on a really tight deadline? So, what do you do to kind of get the inspiration coming, or at least find a place to start?
Well, the worry, actually, I've never struggled for ideas. I think the worry for me is if projects overlap, which is inevitable in the video game industry. It just is. So it's when you've got two things happening at the same time that things get complicated, because you know, there's only one of me. So like, and I haven't learned how to clone myself yet. So and you know, I do have help when it comes to the recordings, like just getting things ready or with orchestration, because it's just a lot of physical work to do. But when it comes down to the composition, you know, that's really just me in my studio here. So that's when things can get a little tricky. But in terms of the ideas, I would struggle if I wasn't allowed to write melodies. And I've been very, very fortunate that for the most part, I've been given a platform to write tunes. The one exception would be The Unspoken, but it's not that kind of score. But even The Unspoken has like melodic through lines throughout a lot of the music. So I think that really helps me, because that's where it all starts for me, is the melody, and then how it combines with the harmony, and then the rest of it just kind of falls into place. Like the crazy instrument selections and like blending, that's just part of my process. So it feels very natural to me, and I don't worry about it. So really, the only thing I'm concerned with, and look, it's a good problem to have, having projects overlap. I'd rather that than not have any projects. But it's just having enough time to be able to do the best job I possibly can on every project. But so far it seems to have worked out. So hope I can keep that continuing, because the more I write, the quicker I get. And you know, you learn something every time you finish a project, like how can I do things more quickly. And I won't bore you with this, but like I've just basically overhauled my studio. I've had a customized version built of my software. I now use Reaper, which is what Will Roger uses, and mm-hmm. I've had a custom version of Reaper built for me around my workflow, and it will probably save me over the course of a year days of time, just in terms of exporting, because when we export, we have to not just render a full mix, we have to render the strings, the brass, the plucked instruments, the like everything has to be separated out, and that's a very, very time consuming process, which my programmer has gotten down to one click and everything's automatically labeled. So because before I was doing that all manually myself, and it was I've lost days doing it. I remember doing Ori, and I was still doing that like 3 days before the session, and I was at the mercy of my computer.
Yeah.
And it's because I'm on my own and I don't have assistants who work here full time. So having this new way of doing things has saved me a lot of time. And there's plenty of composers doing this. I think the most famous is Jeff Beal, who does House of Cards. Like, he records all of House of Cards music in his home.
Wow. I had no idea.
Oh yeah, he sets up all the sessions himself, like and he conducts. Yeah, he does all of the stuff himself at his home. So I feel very, very lucky that we've got so much technology, and also people who know more than I do about technology who are willing to do this kind of stuff for me that help speed up my process more, because that's the main thing that worries me is just having enough time to do everything to the highest quality, because now I can spend more time composing instead of waiting.
Right, which is what you really love. Exactly. And which is what, you know, the studios hire you for.
There's an old saying, I can't remember whose it was, but it's been around our industry for a long time, whereas it's composers spend 90% of the time they have doing all the things that they need to do so they can spend the remaining 10% of the time composing. So you're always trying to move that needle the other way wherever you can, because it's true, you know, there's more to composing, sadly, than just writing music. I wish it was that simple, but you know, emails, invoices, all of the other little stuff that takes 10 minutes, it adds up over the course of the day. So you're doing whatever you can to try and reduce that.
Yeah. You were in Europe with Gary Scheinman at GamesCon and Soundtrack Cologne recently with a live performance of music. And now at the end of October, there's going to be a concert in Poland that's going to feature your music from Ori and Grim Fandango and WoW and Diablo and StarCraft. And I get so envious of people in Europe who can go to these live concerts of game music. And it must be such a thrill to be there with a live audience hearing your music.
I think like also with these concerts, I mean, the fans who turn up really, really love the music and the game. So like you basically can't lose. which is really nice. These concerts are popping up, especially in Europe. We do need to figure out how to do more of them wherever we can. Obviously, Video Games Live does a terrific job, like with everything. With like mm-hmm. I've lost count of how many gigs they've done now, but you know, even VGL can't be in every place at once. But I think what's super nice about this is that, you know, instead of just like a token piece from StarCraft, Warcraft, Diablo, Grim Fandango, Ori, we get to hear a whole bunch of music from the game. And some of them will probably be doing suites of music, others will just be performing, you know, basically the tracks as they are on the album. I know what we're doing for Ori, we're doing 4 suites, because I did not want to just play the album. If you want to play the album, you can just go on to Spotify or iTunes or Amazon. So I think we want to give the people who have turned up something that they didn't quite expect. So it'll be an interpretation of Ori's music. It will still feel like Ori, obviously, but it'll also be Ori's music experienced in a way that you haven't experienced it before. We wanted to do something also that would work for the concert hall, because it's just not as simple as taking the 32 tracks from the soundtrack, and just transfer that to the console. I wish it was that simple, but like sitting and keeping people engaged over, you know, 60 to 90 minutes, it's one thing to do it in a game. It's a very different thing to do it in the concert hall. I think the best video game music concerts tend to be the ones that have that, that keep that in mind, that it really is about the show. Yes, people are there to hear Ori and like re-experience that and revisit that, but it's also, you're also putting on a show. And so that's why like we're doing this this Sweets thing, and there'll be a crowd pleaser in there too, but I think doing it this way will hopefully make the event a bit more special. And also, because we have no pre-records, it's concert hall only, it's just the players in that room, so it will be super organic and super live, and that alone will make it sound different, because there's tons of synths in the Ori soundtrack, and it's no easy thing to just, again, you can't just transfer the stuff that we recorded with the orchestra and expect it to sound good in the concert hall. It's just not that simple, because the stuff that happens in the synths, it needs to be emulated by another instrument. So then there's decisions that need to be made, like, what instrument do we give that to? That's one of the reasons why it has taken so long for this to happen. But I think if this works and people like it, hopefully we can do a couple more of these. I'd love to do one stateside. And I think if this first one goes well, we could hopefully talk with Microsoft about getting some support to do one stateside as well.
Yeah, that would be incredible, because Sony sponsored that amazing concert at Royal Albert Hall.
It definitely can be done. And Microsoft has, they're sitting on a ton of music that, if Microsoft said they were doing a concert and you'll hear Halo, Age of Empires, Ori, the entire Rare catalog, the entire Rare Games catalog they're sitting on, you could put together an absolutely stunning concert. So hopefully one of these concerts will be a nice proof of concept for them, and we'll see what happens in the coming months after this event. But I'm really excited about it. I've also never been to Poland, so the whole thing is a big adventure for me. I don't know if I'll be conducting, but I might be playing piano, I might not, who knows. So I'm not giving anything else away. I think I'm okay in saying that. But yeah, we got a couple of surprises. So the people who will be there, I think they'll have a great time. I think we still have a handful of tickets left. There aren't many. So if anyone's listening and you want to take a trip out to Poland, which is a super cheap country to visit, although maybe less so if you're coming from America, then there are still a few tickets available. That's my shameless plug for the day.
I'll put a link in the copy on my website, respawnshow.com. Yeah. So if you're just listening to the podcast, you can go there and check and see if there's tickets. And that is such an exciting thing to look forward to. And Gareth, as always, it's been just so much fun to talk with you. And thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you so much, Kate.